Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Hey everyone, welcome to D&D Encounters Season 12 Against the Cult of Chaos. Today I can officially say that we're in Session 8, the finale of this wonderful season. This adventure, this session is actually called Temple of Chaos. We didn't get a lot of those over the season because not everybody was playing the same one. So this, I guess, the finale, everyone played the same thing. So let's compare some notes right away. How you doing tonight, Craig and Derek?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing good, thanks.
Doing very well. So let's get started. Just as a note, it was Good Friday up around here, and we have a not to bring non-D&D religion into this, but a lot of people are gone for Good Friday, so we didn't have much of a session. So we're gonna have to pile it up this week sometime. So we leave it to Craig and Derek to give us a wonderful recounting of the encounter. So let's start with whoever wants to go.
Craig, why don't you start?
Sure, why not? Okay, so basically, it started off rather interestingly. The if you know anyone listening remembers, we were talking about it previously that a couple of my players near the end had informed me they would not be attending for the next 2 weeks, which were also the last 2 weeks of the encounter season. So, as a bit of a plot tool, I used that information and had them, both of these characters, die off. There was also a third missing one, but he was not, not gonna miss out for the last one. Anyway, so I had them both killed off, the two that were gone. However, on the day of the encounter, one of them shows up out of the blue, so now I had to find a way to bring him back into it. So basically, to start, we did the regular recap, but for his story, because he actually had no idea that he was dead. So I gave him sort of his soul would have been cut off in the afterlife by none other than the halfling Windell. And a little bit of background on this character, he completely hates halflings, just absolutely hates them. And he is actually also the reason that Windell died in the first season. So he was confronted by an angry halfling Windell who, not giving him a choice, saying that I'm bringing you back to life. You're going to deal with the threat that's taking care of Homelane right now, and then you're going to take care of my wife. You left her mourning. You left her with none of my money. You took all my goods. This is what you're going to do, and if you don't, you're going to suffer the consequences. He wasn't able to protest, and he found himself awakened in the basement of the moat house, back to his normal self. Made his way back to town. So at the same time, we also had our Dragonborn character back. This is the one that ran off with Sister Euphema. So we filled in a little bit of his story where he had run off with her. And I kind of wonder if maybe it's just a little bit of fear of the challenges ahead. But he ran off with her in the night. They decided that maybe they would elope. Made it about as far as one of the local barns on the outskirts of the town. Decided to crash there the night so he'd get his proper extended rest.
Although I don't know if he got much rest that night.
No, not much rest. So he woke up in the morning a little frazzled and little pangs of regret the next morning. And they both decided that, they should go back and make sure that their friends are okay. They couldn't just walk away from it all. So that kind of led us, everyone reconvening in the town square where, Heffern Hommel's statue is now talking and giving everyone a bit of a pep talk and getting everyone riled up to protect the town. So basically, we had the adventurers follow his lead down to the ravine in the Caves of Chaos area where he was to provide a distraction. And because, of course, as if you remember, there's a whole ton of kobolds, orcs, and all that kind of thing that are milling about down there. So he said he's going to provide a distraction which would allow the PCs their chance to get into the Temple of Chaos, which is hidden within the Caves of Chaos. Now,
so let me get this straight. The Dragonborn was the one that was providing the distraction?
No. So did I say the Dragonborn? I meant to say the statue, if that's the case.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, sorry. The statue of Heffern Hommel from the town of Homelane I guess I kind of glossed over that detail, but he reanimates, basically, or he animates, I should say, with the ghost of Hafren Hommel, and there's a big ritual between the followers of the Lawbringer and of the Old Faith, where they kind of work in unison together. They sing a chant together, and it helps him animate and aid the players in their battle, basically.
Like the Statue of Liberty in Ghostbusters.
That's exactly what I was thinking about when I read it, too.
We should have put the Safe Puff Marshmallow Man in there.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, man, it's just like the Statue of Liberty. But anyway.
Of course, my table is full of young new players, and like none of them would even catch the reference
at all. You know, I almost made a freaking reference to that, to have like the "Your Love" bit. But I was like, no, I'm not going to bother.
You should have thrown slime on your players.
I did not, though.
You should have thrown slime on your players.
Yeah, that's right. But so anyway, Hafren Hommel kind of gets everyone riled up, and you know, everyone's just completely amazed that this is happening. And you know, in my version of the campaign, I had it that you know, the very next day was supposed to be their big election for the mayor. So you know, all this chaos is going on, and Hafren Hommel has decided that we're going to go down, we're going to deal with the chaos moat, and you know, shut this door forever to Miska. So the, you know, the PCs made their way down, and while he was off distracting all the kobolds and all the other beasts down by the Caves of Chaos, it afforded the players an opportunity to sneak in. Now, as it's written, it's just basically, if you just read or did it as written, you would just read several paragraphs, and then you would just get right into the combat. So I tried to change it up a little bit. I allowed them to do stealth checks to get in, and a couple of the less stealthy folks went last. As not to, you know, accidentally screw up the more stealth enhanced folk. And in this case, one of our guys who missed the previous encounter came in like with a full deck, basically, like full healing surges and all that. So I basically he failed his stealth by a fair bit. I just had him slip up and lose a couple of healing surges and all that. But they did eventually make their way in, and that's where they discovered that the priestess of chaos, like Anug, I believe her name is, was waiting for them, and they were expecting them all along. So the combat played out, and you know, part of the encounter, though, is that you don't come in. The goal is not just kill the monsters. You have to deactivate this moat of chaos, which is being powered by three altars in the room. So there's a point earlier where the statue kind of gives you that hint to say that, remember, you know, this is what our goal is. We need to take down this moat. So, you know, I can't remember how many rounds it was before you guys actually started doing that. But do you remember, Derek?
Before we started actually deactivating the moats?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the altar?
Yeah.
Two or three for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, you know, she initially to start, there's just two cultists, and then there's the priestess. So you know, they come in, and it looks like they might actually have a little bit of advantage, although we only had four people at the table tonight, or that night, sorry. And you know, they came in, there was a fighting that went on, and if anyone who's played it, you'll know that this encounter was a little bit tougher if you were just going in combat minded. So partway through, she raises her zombies, and then there's a skeleton that comes through the chaos mode as well, and it attacks the player. So they get harried pretty quickly, surrounded by, you know, packs of zombies, these cultists, and now the skeleton that pops out. And at the end of every turn of his attacks, he teleports right back into the moat. So it was a pretty difficult fight, but once they started to realize that they had to actually deactivate the altars, then things quickly turned. They were able to take down the zombie minions pretty quick. And, you know, they took down one of the cultists. Some quick, I think you guys kind of focus fired on one of them. The other one was getting pretty low, so it really, we just had the main cultist woman and the
skeleton.
Well, the skeleton, yes. Oh, that's right, because he didn't actually take much damage at all, if I remember correctly, because he kept teleporting back and no one wanted to.
Yeah, it sounds like you'd have to ready an action in order to hit him.
That was exactly what I said. I said someone, because we kept thinking that it was a power of the monster that let him teleport back. So I said, I go, if you got a power that'll blind him, ready your action, hit him and blind him, and that way he won't be able to teleport because he won't be able to see where he's going. But then Craig explained later that it was part of the magic of the moat, and I'm like, oh, I would have been pissed if I had done that. Yeah. Set it all up, hit him, blinded him, and he still got to get whisked away, I would have felt cheated.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that was his sort of shtick. And now, I mean, there was also another thing where I think is if you got with it or adjacent to the moat, you took 5 damage or something like that. But I decided not to bother. There was a lot of like little fiddly bits to track with this encounter too. But I decided not to bother with that. We had only 4 people. We were down one of the players. So a couple of things I went a little easier on. In the end, they did have the skeleton was still there. They had one of the cultists. The zombies got wiped out pretty quick, if I recall correctly, and the priestess was left. So they very quickly, once they realized they had to take the altars out, they all 3 got shut down. And with that, of course, Hafren Hommel's skeleton crashes to the ground, which they realize is Hafren Hommel's at this point because suddenly his ghost comes rushing in. Now, as written, the ghost comes rushing in, the moat explodes, and the room fills with his laughter, and then he's gone, basically. The other priest or the other cultist that was still there, I just had her die in the chaos, just basically that she would have fallen down, hit her head kind of thing. But instead of having Hafren Hommel disappear, I actually had him reappear as Hafren Hommel in the flesh.
Which we needed because the party was bloodied at this point.
Yeah, and she had just recharged because I think she was recently bloodied or she hadn't been bloodied. But once she got bloodied, she recharged her her encounter power. So, yeah, at this point, it was kind of rough. So we had Hafren Hommel come in and lead the charge to get her. So I kind of played it out more like a chase. She was trying to get to the back room anyway because there's this room on the battle map, which doesn't really serve any purpose in the adventure. So I actually kind of built in some things that she could get from there. But it never came to be. They were able to stop her in the back. Hafren Hommel stopped her, and the other players came in and just pretty much obliterated her. But it was good because at the end, everyone got to have sort of a... I wanted to give everyone kind of a personalized ending. So I thought the ending was a lot of fun.
I basically stole that idea when I ran it. So.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way it's written, it's just sort of like, oh, and everyone's happy and the end kind of thing, right? But, I mean, obviously, being D&D, it's, you know, of course you can add these kind of things, and it's almost kind of something where you'd be almost expected to. So, well, at least that's the way I kind of felt.
But, you know what? I kind of like, I do like that idea. How many people did you have at your table again?
On that night, we had 4.
Okay, so it was very, so Hafren did make a difference, kind of like made the 5th player, right?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Like, I mean, he wasn't overly super powerful, but he was there to absorb some damage and to also, like, help steady the big bad.
Yeah, you just took the skeleton stats, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. And I also figured that, because I just figured it was just weird that he kind of would just disappear, you know what I mean? So
that makes, you know, it makes sense. I have an idea also brewing that I bring Hafren back to town. Did he go back to town after?
Well, he went out with them, but after, you know, they defeated her, they go out and they find that the statue is back to its sort of sedentary pose again, out in the field, no longer animated. But when they got back to town, they were greeted with cheers and parties, and Hafren had, at the time of the defeat of, had a... appeared to the people in the village to let everyone know that they had been victorious this day and blah, 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 blah. But then he had sort of moved on to the next life.
See, I like your idea of bringing him back to life like that. I think I'll keep him alive, that he can go back and be...
living his days?
Yeah, well, go back to adventuring and keeping evil at bay from Hall Malane.
Well, see, because I picture him kind of like the Battlestar Galactica. Well, did you ever watch the remake Battlestar Galactica?
No.
Yes.
Okay, anyway. Okay, so spoilers for anyone who has never watched it. And I know this actual plot element was a bit of a contention amongst the fans, but one of the characters dies very near the end, and she comes back basically unexplained that she comes back, and then it seems like she was just back to help someone with something, and basically after that particular instance is done, they turn around and she's just not there anymore. It's like she's moved on now. At least that's the way I interpreted it, so I kind of made that the case for Hafren Hommel to sort of see this done.
That's cool. That's
one
really
of the
cool.
One of the details that Craig did that I thought was really good as well was Yeah, the way he described it was after we defeated the Chaos Mote, we came back out into the valley, and there was the statue of Hafrnhamal. It was now frozen back in its main pose, because obviously his spirit had left the statue and returned to his body, which had then in turn done its service and disappeared. And so we're like, oh, well, that's good. And Craig had, you know, added the description that the monsters were no longer allies. They were all now fighting each other, and they were just, you know, backing off into their respective caves. And like, the party was so hurt, we just said, oh, that's an interesting tidbit. We got back to the town. And then, so of course, one of the NPCs is like, well, what happened to Hafrn? And we're like, oh, well, you know, he fought the monsters, he did the good fight, and then when he was done doing that, the statue returned to its normal pose. And they're like, well, we can't leave it in the valley. We're going to go send some guys to go get it so we can bring it back. It's the symbol of a victory of our village. And so I thought that was a nice little touch that I, again, borrowed for my campaign.
Oh, yeah, very good, very good. But there was my favorite part about running it was doing – I really love doing those ending bits, because especially with the way you know, the halfling hater's character worked out. Because, you know, he came back and I was like, all right, so what are you going to do? You're back. Everyone is, like, praising you for your services, but you know you have this, you know, this oath to this halfling, whether or not you wanted it, but you are under this oath to basically work as a servant for an undisclosed amount of time until he feels it was appropriate for Wendell's wife. He's like, no, you know what? I'm not even going to stay for celebrations. I'm just going to leave. I'm like, okay, we'll come back to that in a second. So,
yeah.
So, but I mean, Derek and another player's character who was also a bit of a stealthy thievery kind of guy had decided that they were going to work together on a bit of a long con with the town. You know, now that they're kind of used the reputation of being these heroes, you know, the election was actually put off by a week because of these overwhelming events. And the suggestion was made that maybe one of the PCs wants to run for mayor. So one of them did, in fact, elect to run for mayor, and it was Derek's cohort. He decided that he would get the office, and then they would be free to basically run a bit of their own bandit operation out of the moat house.
He became the mayor, and I went out and started recruiting new bandits. And so we were going to play the long con to just rob Homoland blind of all its resources over the next couple of years.
You're talking about like taxes and putting
like everything and everything. Yeah, yeah. It's like my character would become like the head constable when really he was like the town's worst villain.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Over the years, just exploiting that your heroic reputation. So anytime your character would be called into question, you could always go back to that well for as long as it would last you, right? But and then we had our Dragonborn, who initially seemed to want to abandon Sister Euphemia. He kind of had the morning after feeling like, oh, geez, I'll call you later. Yeah. Sort of a feeling, but this time he was so overwhelmed by their victory and everything. Sister Euphemia was waiting for him, open arms, and he proposed to her, and they held a grand ceremony in the village later on that was preceded by Canonist Ide, since they were both followers of the Lawbringer, and even the barony to the west, the Duchess came to visit based on, you know, the harrowing tale of these heroes. There was just this grand celebration, blah, 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 blah.
Well, won't he be very upset that, you know, when he finds out that she can't lay eggs?
Well, he brought that up. Yeah.
He's like, we're gonna lay so many eggs together.
Yeah, exactly.
She'll be like a turtle once a season. She'll bury it out in the field over the Lawbringer's temple.
I mean, who knows what that spawn's going to look like, but it'll be interesting anyway. But anyways, that was a pretty nice wrap-up for him. But then I came back to our lone wanderer who wanted to try and escape the wrath of the halfling. So I asked, you know, what is your plan now? You've left the town. His idea was like, you know, I'm gonna go back to the Astral Sea. I'm like, okay, so how are you doing that? So I'm gonna you know, find a nice spot, cast my ritual. I'm like, okay, you begin your ritual, you begin preparations, and you're going through the motions, but something doesn't feel right. You know, the effect doesn't feel like what it normally feels like. Something seems to be off with this. And, you know, before he has time to react, little halfling hands reach up from the ground and start dragging him below the surface, and he's unable to fight back. And, of course, the sneering veneer of Wendell appears before him, saying that, you know, I told you I would be back for you if you did not follow my my demands. Now you will have eternal suffering. And he basically got dragged under the ground, and that was the end of it.
Oh, that's cool. It sounded like a setup, like the Big Bang Theory. Remember that episode where Raj was having dreams of Bernadette?
You know what? I haven't actually seen that episode.
I have.
Oh, okay.
But Derek actually described it kind of like in Ghost when...
Yeah, the Patrick Swayze Ghost movie at the end where the bad guy gets pulled away by the shadow creatures. That's what I said. I go, sounds like that, yeah.
Because I was like, you get under the ground, then the ground sort of like repairs itself back to sort of a nice, pleasant meadow with birds chirping and the sun is shining. Like nothing had ever happened here.
Yeah, and then I said, after he gets sucked down, like 2 seconds later, you see like these boots walking over the spot where he went down, just passing through, and it's my character with a couple of the bandits going, come on, the moat house is this way. It's like, nice. You know, sort of full circle.
Yeah, that's a nice way to end it.
Sounds like you guys had a lot of good role players at the table.
Yeah, well, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I mean, I was one of the players at the table, and the other guys were pretty good too. Like, we didn't have any brand new players. Everybody had some D&D experience in their background. Some had considerable experience, like myself, so that always helps. I mean, we had a couple of players who certainly didn't take it as seriously, but that's half the fun when you have a couple of goofy role players and then a couple who take it a little more seriously. It's all good in the end.
Cool.
Yeah, indeed. And I mean, like I said, the one guy who kind of met a bad end, I mean, it wasn't like an upsetting thing for him. Like, no, how dare you do this to me? I'm never coming back.
He was laughing the whole time. He thought it was fun.
Yeah.
So he got Yankeed down.
Indeed.
Nice.
I believe the threat was made afterwards that because it's not just his character that hates halfling. He himself dislikes the halfling race. The player himself.
Him, the player. So we told him he had to play a halfling next time. The whole group was going to play a party. Yeah.
Things. Everyone is going to play halfling next season. He's like, well, I'm just not going to play at your table then. It was good. Nice. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Cool. So that was Harry. That was Harry T. North.
Yep.
And now I guess we head over to the Silver Snail, where Derek DM'd the last session himself.
Yeah, I DM'd one, and then obviously Craig played at one of the other tables as well. But I think let me get through mine first. So again, having played at Craig's table before, I was able to borrow some of the elements from his that I thought worked well and incorporate them into mine. I didn't want it to just be the Hafren Hommel statue starts up and then boom, you're into combat. So again, borrowing a little bit from what Craig did, I tried to expand it out and roleplay it a bit more, especially when the Castilian shows up and asks, like, what's been going on? I gave him almost like an accusatory nature, like, He wanted to know what was happening, and all the townsfolk kept just sort of looking at the heroes like nobody wanted to answer him. I made it seem like he was a really menacing figure that the town was not very comfortable around, almost like Mr. Burns, like they sort of revere him and fear him a little bit. And so I had the player characters. I'm like, okay, you guys, you know, time to step up. And so the one guy was just very blunt and direct. He's like, chaos attacked and we've taken care of it. And he's like, uh-huh. And what do you, you know, a googly, what do you mean by that? And so I had them actually roll up some diplomacy checks and, you know, role play it out. You know, I wanted to make them feel like this was actually a part of the thing and there were repercussions. My intent was, if they were really going to play it up a bit, was he would potentially offer them assistance, maybe a healing potion or something. But we never really got to that. They made a few checks and they seemed content with it. And then when the Hafren Hommel, the statue starts to animate and you have to, the two sides start to do the chanting, I'm like, you guys have to, I go, you know, if you help them, that could make this even, you know, empower it even better, like even more. So I had them make either religion checks, diplomacy checks, arcane checks, depending on what they wanted to do. So, you know, again, it probably took about 20 minutes to sort of get that underway. And then...
a mini skill challenge type thing without any kind of dire consequences.
Yeah, really, I any role was going to be successful. It didn't really matter. I just wanted them to feel like they were contributing to this story. It wasn't just, and then blah, blah, blah happens.
Yeah,
good.
And then when they got to the valley again, and then I just read all the stuff through. This is what happens. I get to the valley. I said, okay. So the description says like the Hafren Hommel statue. He's basically a golem. So the Hafren golem would go into the valley and draw all the monsters away, and then the PCs could very, you know, quickly and quietly try and get to the cave where the temple was. So I told them. I said, you all have to get there. But I said, it's perilous. So I want you to tell me what you're going to do to avoid dangers. And so the first character was like, well, you know, stealth might be good, but I'm not a stealthy character. And then, you know, so we were trying to talk it out. One of the other stealthy characters said, like, you know, what time of day is it? And we sort of just figured, well, you know, we were playing around 6 o'clock at night at the store. So I'm like, oh, it's probably about six. The sun will be down about an hour. The shadows are long on one side of the valley. So they're like, can we sort of go from shadow to shadow? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, give me stealth check and we'll go ahead and do that. And so the other character who was playing a cleric said, well, you know, I'm a drow. Can I use my globe of darkness to try and put it in a very strategically significant place to create additional shadows or darkness? So I was like, yeah, you know, that's certainly a good use of it. I'm like, it's not like it's stationary. So you have to pop it up. So, you know, we role play that out a bit. We made a couple of checks. They were fine. They made it. The other four characters were all just like dumb fighter characters. So they're like, can we just use athletics and sprint as fast as we can? I was like, yeah, sure, go for it. And then the one character says, well, I'm going to try and stealth first. And if that doesn't work, then I'm going to run. I'm like, okay. She rolled a one on her stealth. She only had a plus two. So I'm like, basically, this is what happens. The tree is sort of shaped funny where it goes straight up and then out. I go, and you sort of follow it and your legs are completely visible, but your top part is hidden behind these branches. And I'm like, you think you're hidden, but a couple of the monsters can see your feet. So they start charging at you. And so I basically just said, you know, you take a couple of hits before you're able to kill them. So it loses a healing surge. But I think this character had like 8 surges anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And then I just had all of them make athletics check, and all four of them rolled 20 or higher. So I'm like, yeah, you guys just sprint right past the danger zone. You get there, you're out of, you know, you take a couple of minutes to catch your breath. The drow gets a globe of darkness back. One of the other characters used a utility power that gave them a bonus to a skill check. I'm like, you get that back. And then away you go. So, you know, it was probably 20 to 30 minutes from when we started to the time we actually got to the combat. And then the combat only took like maybe an hour. I mean, this was my fastest session of the whole time was tonight. This was the quickest one of the whole 8 weeks.
But you had six at the table, right? Instead of seven?
Six at the table. Yeah. So I added one of the brutes, the acolytes. So there were supposed to be two acolytes. I added a third, partly because we had the sixth player, and partly because we had three very, very powerful strikers who most weeks can just crush through the monsters. Like one of them does like 20 to 30 with a hit. I think those guys only had 46 hit points. So I'm like,
well, what's he playing?
Slayers. Two of them are playing slayers at almost identical builds. Jeez. And I think they're doing like a D12 plus 9 and a D10 plus 10 or something. Oh, and then crap. You add the power strike onto that. The other guy's playing a barbarian where he's doing 3d6 plus 6 with an at will. It's disgusting, their output. It's good. I mean, it's fun for them, and they just mow through the monsters. So I thought, I'll add another guy in there. And the first round was not great. The heroes took quite a bit of damage. Most of them were bloodied or close to bloody. Like all my monsters hit in the first round. The three acolytes, only one of them hit with that chain mace combo power. Like I just had all three of them do it in the first round, so I wouldn't have to remember it. The first guy, he got the barbarian, pulled him in, hit him, brought the barbarian down to like 5 hit points. And the other two guys, they missed, but the priestess managed to get close enough to use the blast to get a bunch of them. And yeah, it was ugly. And then of course you called in the zombies, and the zombies rolled the top of the initiative. So they don't show up till the second round. Well, they show up at the top of the second round. So the players, by the time they got to act, there's in the second round, they were all bloodied. And I think two of them by that point were unconscious. The cleric got the power where she gets the vulnerable 5 on her from the priestess in the first round. So she had the vulnerable 5, the zombies hit for 8 points. So 3 zombies in a row, 8 plus the vulnerable 5, 13 points. So 13, 13, 13 plus the damage she took in the first place. Boom. She was down for like 6 rounds before they revived her. She'd made 2 strikes right away and then just kept rolling good on the death saves. But, you know, it was looking ugly, and the controller had beguiling strands. So she was able to get like 5 or 6 of the bad guys every time she used it. She kept missing all the minions. So that's like the minion killer. You attack will. She only needed a 7. She was rolling like 4s and 6s. So, again, the minions.
I hate those knights.
Yeah. The minions do 8 points. So, I mean, there's 8 of them on the board. I even held the 4 that were near the throne. I held them back for a round after the other ones were on the board, because I thought, well, the controller will wipe out these 4, and then I'll bring the next 4 in. Now, it was ugly. The damage, I had the monster spread the damage around as much as I could, but it got to a point where I knew any hit on anybody was going to drop them. We had 3 guys down, making death saves very early into the fight. the lead, we have one guy who's playing a hybrid leader defender. He used his heal. He used a standard action to revive another character. He brought two characters back into the fight. Then he fell. Then the next round, one of the revived characters, who only had like 9 hit points, was down. It was a tough fight for them. And they didn't catch on right away that they were supposed to use the items to on the altars. So after about the second or third, it was probably by the end of the second round, I was sort of like, okay, I was hinting to them, oh, you're wielding the magic sword? You feel like an affinity between the sword and one of the altars. You figure that, you know, the powers draw from the same source, and you can basically use the sword's energy to disable the altar. And then they all sort of, everyone at the table was like, oh, yeah, we're supposed to do that. So when they did the first altar, which they picked up on, so they were able to do that really quickly, I basically took half the remaining zombies off the board. I'm like, yeah, a bunch of the zombies just, you know, fall down and die, not to come back. And then when they got the second one, much later in the combat, I had there was still one more zombie. I had it disappear, and I brought all the acolytes to their bloodied value. There were still two of them on the board, and one of them had not taken any damage yet. So I brought them to exactly their bloodied value. And by the time they got the third one down, the third altar down, when the second altar disappeared, that's when I had Hafren Hommel come in and take possession of the skeleton, which hadn't missed an attack yet. 3 rounds in a row, it had hit and done almost the max damage, which I think is close to 20. It was killing people left and right. But every time he was attacking, I'm like, you hear Hafren's voice coming from the skeleton. I'm so sorry, my friends. I don't control my own body. Like, I wanted to give them a sense that maybe there was a way that they could get him back on their side. But nobody really asked if there was a way to do it or took any actions to try and make that happen. So yeah, when they disabled the second altar, I had Hafren take control of the skeleton and become a PC. So I gave his stats to one of the characters who was already unconscious. And then, of course, for the next 3 rounds, Hafren missed. So that kind of sucked. One of the things I did that I was very proud of myself was the barbarian was wearing the golden circlet. He fell pretty early in the fight, but he got deeper into the room than anybody. He was like totally away from the rest of the party. And then I think he got pushed or slid even farther. And then he fell unconscious. So I had one of the acolytes drag his body into that back room where the bedroom and the office are behind the curtain. And so then I just took them off the map. And they're like, well, where'd they go? I'm like, well, they're back there. You have no idea what's going on. Well, what do we have to do to help them? Well, you're in the middle of combat. Do you want to risk opportunity attacks to run away and go, oh, no, we can't do that? So it was like about 2 or 3 rounds he was back. I had him keep making death saves, and he didn't. He kept failing the death saves. And finally, in about the third round, I turned to the girl sitting next to me, and I'm like, give me a male name, any name. She's like, Jacob. I'm like, okay, this acolyte's name is Jacob. So the priestess calls out, Jacob, stop fooling around back there. We've got things to do. So I had Jacob come out sort of doing up his pants. What? I wasn't done yet. They're all like, hey, what's going on back there? I was like, you have no idea. And then the very next turn in the initiative was the guy who was in the back room. He rolled a 20. So he's like, all right, I'm conscious. I was like, oh, okay. Well, you wake up and, you know, clearly something's been going on. He's like, uh-oh, like what? I'm like, there's this foul taste in your mouth. And they're all like, ew! And I'm like, but it's not altogether unfamiliar. And they're like, oh! So we had a little fun at his expense. And so then I'm like, okay, well, you're conscious. And then so when his turn came around the next round, I'm like, okay, what do you want to do? He's like, I'm drinking my healing potion. I'm using my second wind. And I'm quietly moving up. Like, he basically didn't want to draw attention to himself till he was back full fighting form. Meanwhile, like, 2 more of his friends had fallen unconscious. So then on his turn, he managed to, like, come barreling out from behind the curtain and deactivate the third altar. So that was like this, you know, heroic, all right, I'm right back into it. They didn't know he was going to wake up. So, no, it was good. They managed to stay on their feet and turn the tide, but it was tough. It was it could have very – if I had run it exactly by the book, it would have been a total party kill, no question.
Yeah.
And, I had fun. I enjoyed it a lot, but – sometimes when the dice are hot, like, the monster output was considerable. I thought they did a lot of damage, like more than absolutely. I was expecting them to.
Yeah, for sure. And the same thing here. If I feel like if I had played them up to their fullest potential and maximized their powers and some of the things that I toned down, it could have easily been a TPK.
Well, and again, we've said this every week, party balance. This party had hybrid leader and now a full leader who came in last week. Now, unfortunately, the full leader was knocked unconscious in the first round or in the second round before she was able to use any. So that was unfortunate. But then the other five characters, they had the hybrid leader, and he had to use that heal spell like in the first round. And then they had all the strikers. So, I mean, you know, had they been able to, had they maybe had a second controller or even a character who had secondary controller like powers, or if they were able to bring the leader back in more quickly. I mean, a lot of ifs, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking, you can look at it and go, well, we could have done this, we should have done that. But, you know, when you got a party full of strikers, they got to hit, they got to hit hard. Like we had one of our strikers hit almost every round. But I've never seen so many ones and twos show up on a D10, like except rolling game, because I had the same problem. But yeah, it's unfortunate when your dice just don't cooperate, whether they don't hit or they hit and do the minimum damage. Like when you have a potential doing 20 points and you're only doing like 7, it's not cool.
No, it is not.
So did you finalize it in any way, shape, or form, kind of like Craig did?
Yeah, I like the idea that the statue had. You know, basically stopped when the fighting happened. So I said, I'm like, you guys come out of the altar or out of the temple. And I said, it's just chaos. The monsters are now fighting each other. And I said, they were smart. All they would have to do is, you know, carefully retreat back to their own caves. But I said, they're stupid. On their way back to their cave, they're like, well, I'm just going to punch this guy in the face because why not? He's right here. I'll take an opportunity attack against him. And so I said, you know, these creatures are not intelligent. And now they're all fighting each other and they're trying to, you know, take each other to town. I'm like, it's a combination of baseball players hitting a home run derby and Tiger Woods, you know, on the drive, doing the long drive. I'm like, the ogres especially are just teeing off on everything. And I said, but one detail I added is there. I said, I go, the Hafren Hommel statue is no longer active because his spirit obviously is gone. He had joined the fight and disappeared. I'm like, the statue is now in the middle of the valley. And I said, the monsters can't go anywhere near it. I'm like, even monsters that charge right at it, when they get close, they like take a beeline around it and end up on the other side. I'm like, it's almost like there's an area that's been sanctified by this presence of this statue where the evil creatures just cannot get to it. And it's almost like Hafren's statue is now a symbol of goodness in this otherwise evil valley. And they're all like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was like, yeah, I think that is kind of cool. So they did that. And then when they came back to town, I, you know, much like, Craig did, I just explained that, you know, you come back to town, you explain what happened, everyone's cheering, you know, they beg you to stay. And then I just go around the table. I'm like, what do you think your characters would do? I said, now I already told my group that they could potentially just keep these characters next season. So I said, don't worry about that. I'm like, forget about that. Just if this was a completely self-contained adventure, what would you do at the end? And so I just went around the table, and the two drows were both like, no, we're out of here. We're done. We take our cash. We take our reward. They're basically like Han Solo at the end of the first Star Wars. They're like, taking your money and leaving. Yep, hell yeah. Except they don't come back to fight later. They're just, they take the reward and
hightail it on out.
That's the drow way. I got no problem with that. The half-orc barbarian, he's like, yeah, I probably stay maybe one or two nights, have some drinks, have some food. And he goes, and then I'm on to the next place to look for more adventures. And let's see, who else was at the table? Was an elf slayer who had been there from the very first week. She was one of the only people who had been there the whole time. She said, again, she's like, she had that encounter with Saucy Grand, who tried to recruit her. Bro, I can teach you the ropes and you'd be the queen of the town. And she's like, nah, I don't know so much, Grand. And of course, Saucy Grand's like, well, you know, you should stay around at least a little while and have your pick of the men before you leave. So I think her intention was to stick around for a week or two and, you know, celebrate in the town and then move on. The tiefling had sort of, at a couple of points in the adventure, he had used bluff to sort of say, I'm on a greater mission and this is just a sidetrack. I'm really an evil character here to do evil things. And so he's like, yeah, basically I sort of revealed that, yeah, that was true all along and I'm out of here. And we're like, oh, okay, interesting. And the only one who decided to stay was the pixie wizard. And she's like, I'm running for mayor. And we're like, okay, they make you the mayor. You're the first pixie mayor in the history of Hommel Lane. And they think it's a novelty for a while. But then they realize that you've got the brains to back it up. You are an exceptional mayor. So at the end, only the one character stayed. Everyone else took. And what was interesting was, so while we were doing this, all the other two tables in the store were done. So the players were packing up and leaving. Now, normally my table runs considerably later because we usually have more players and we have a couple players who can't start right on time every week. The first week all season that we've been done at the same time as the other tables. So the other people actually were all around watching. They saw we were right near the end. And I talked to a couple of them after. I didn't do anything like that. So they almost seemed disappointed that they didn't have that opportunity at the end of their adventure to sort of say, well, what do you do now? They're just like, go back to the town and partied. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, that's all well and good.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping I'd get something like that, too, out of our out of the table that I played at tonight. But c'est la vie.
No luck. Oh, well. But, no, it was good. It was fun. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I really enjoyed the season. And I thought this was a good conclusion. I mean, it's hard to compare it to last season where the final encounter was just – it was for level 8 characters. And there was just so much going on. It was the full one full side of the poster map. So you had all this terrain and all this stuff going on. Like the last season's finale to me was all fun, but incredibly complex. Whereas this one was very straightforward. There were a few quirks, a few twists and turns, but nothing crazy. I think of all the encounters we've run so far this season, this one was probably the one that seemed to be the most straightforward. There were the fewest questions. There were the fewest variations. It's like all along the way, players had tremendous flexibility to do pretty much whatever they wanted. This was the only part of the encounters that I can think of that was, you must do it this way, and this is the objective. And,
well,
and
so
it needed to be that way to just wrap things up, but it was almost refreshing to go back to that just for a week.
Yeah, well, I noticed that also just from listening to you guys speak tonight. The everything else was dependent on a dependence of something else, right? Whereas this one here brings everything together. I noticed it when I was reading it to run it this week anyway. And I noticed that right away it just starts off saying, okay, well, everybody gets together in the town saying, what's going on? The statue comes to life, blah, blah, blah. Then you're at the caves, you go. So that's how I see that encounter, right? Whereas everything else is like, well, if you go to the Golden Grain Inn and you see this guy sitting there and you question that guy, well, then it'll take you to this place, right? So it's there was no dependence on there. It was done.
Yeah. Yep.
Quick conclusion.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, no, I'm glad that it's done just because it does bring some closure and it gives us an opportunity to now move on to a new adventure. I'm really enjoying the shorter sessions that are 8 weeks long and then done. It's, in my opinion, it's just long enough. I'm sort of at the point where I've enjoyed the ride, but I'm ready to get off. And this was the perfect time. And that's certainly not any sort of criticism on the adventure itself. Quite the opposite. I really, really enjoyed this season. I thought the whole module went very smoothly. We had a lot of fun. There was a tremendous amount of freedom and flexibility, but I think 8 weeks was perfect. I think if it had been another 2 weeks, it might have just seemed a little too long.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that too. It's just like if you're in a home game and, you know, the characters decide they're going to travel to the Underdark or whatever and they're stuck down there for a long time, eventually they're going to want to get out of there, change of scenery kind of thing, right? Like, it's kind of the same thing here. You're stuck in this storyline for the next number of weeks. So by the time you get to the end, it's... you're ready to be done with it kind of thing.
Yep.
All the confusion comes together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The order has been brought to counteract the chaos.
Correct.
So, now this is sort of outside of the scope of what we're talking about here, but for the next season of D&D Encounters, the adventure has the characters beginning at level 3 and progressing through to level 6 by the end. And so because I have a lot of new players with my group, I explained that next week is the week 0. They can show up to make characters if they need help with characters. But I did give them the option. I said, look, most of you have been playing these characters 8 weeks now. Most of you, this is your own, like a lot of them are new to the game. So I'm like, in seasons past, we would create brand new characters and start again. But because we're going to be playing at a higher level this time around, if you guys want to bring these same characters back in so that you can continue to develop these characters that you are now 8 weeks familiar with, I don't have any problem with that. However, the adventure takes place in a different world and all the rest of that jazz. So I said, you know, we're going to have to just wave our magic DM wand and say, this happens, you're now in a new place. Yeah, you know, you're now in the new place. But, you know, I gave them that option. I told them to think about it till next week or the week after, and we'd figure it all out. But I did let them know that if the three... magic artifacts they found, they would not be able to keep those into the next adventure. Those were unique to this place. So I was surprised. I thought a couple of the characters, a couple of the players at least would jump at the chance that, you know, let's make new characters for the new game. But, you know, more than half of them said that they like the character they've got. They want to continue to see the character develop. They've sort of established the personality of the character they're playing, and they're going to keep going. So I think that will certainly add to the fun and excitement for next season. So I'm looking forward to it already.
I think it makes sense. I mean, you're giving them an opportunity to actually learn a character past third level. That's the first thing. Second of all, who knows? They might start a group, right?
Yeah, no, exactly.
That's how I see it. Encounters is great for that. You come in, you play your encounter, and you make a group.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it's supposed to encourage too, right? So,
yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, for the new players, it might have almost been a little bit more difficult to have them create level 3 characters right from scratch. I mean, we're all experienced players. We can make a character at any level. Sit down, make a level 20 character. Okay, done. But yeah. The new player, even making a level 1 character is hard enough. But now saying, okay, you got to make them a level 3. And, you know, it's just more steps and more options. And, you know, I think coming in with familiar characters is going to certainly speed things up. And it'll have a level of comfort and familiarity right off the bat that should hopefully get the gameplay moving quickly.
Well, we're taking a leap of faith this season. We're heading to D&D next. We're going to take a look, see how that goes. Thankfully, they already have pre-generated characters because I'm not really knowing how to create characters myself. So I'm going to go through the whole process with my guys this season. We'll see how that goes compared to the regular 4th edition.
Actually, speaking of pre-generated characters, I got a notice from Greg Bilsland today from Wizards of the Coast, and he'd said that they are going to provide pre-generated characters for both D&D Next and 4th Edition for the next season. The D&D Next characters are already available in the conversion kit, and the level 4 pre-gens will be available on the Wizards site probably next Wednesday. So that's for those players that prefer to use the pre-gens, and for those DMs who like to have some pre-gens on hand for players walking through the door. You know, those will be available, and we will certainly link to them from Dungeons Master on our encounters page and from our pre-generated character library. So watch for those.
Yeah, and I think as time goes on, we're going to start seeing more people wanting to try it in the D&D Next rule set. Because, I mean, even tonight, a couple of the guys at my table were already saying that they kind of wish we could have played this in this particular season with the Next rules, but especially next season, they're a little more curious about doing that now, and a few other guys kind of spoke up about it as well.
Are you guys going to try it?
I mean I'm completely willing to run it. I know one of the DMs is not too keen on running it in Next, only because he doesn't actually know it. He hasn't been keeping up with the Next rules, and he might be a little too busy to actually, you know, get any kind of semblance of system mastery, I guess, for it.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, I've been reading them off and on as it comes. And I mean, it's not that complicated. I don't think if you have experience with D&D, I don't think you're going to struggle too much with it.
No, it kind of reminds me. It's got a really weird feel. But anyway, I guess we'll get to that when the adventure starts. But
yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, do you guys have anything else you can think of about tonight's encounter specifically, or just general comments on the season that we haven't maybe covered in one of our previous podcasts or in this one here tonight?
Well, just more reiteration of that. I really enjoyed this the format for this season, and I'm glad that they sort of branched out and tried this type of sort of classical style adventure in the encounters format. I think it was a grand success.
I agree.
Yeah, I encourage our listeners to check out the interview we did with Sean Merwin earlier this week. We talked to him about drawing influence from the classic adventures and sort of tying it all together. It was a good discussion, and I think that anyone who's played this season and enjoyed it will certainly get something out of listening to the podcast. So if you haven't already given it a listen, by all means, I encourage you to do so.
And for those of you that that really enjoyed this season, those of you that are new or those of you that are experienced, you know, you can take that adventure, go talk to a DM, go talk to somebody else, and, you know, maybe get a photocopy of something like the Town of Halma Lane, or even go take a look at, you can go purchase them. Can you get the Village of Hamlet in 4th?
You can get it, absolutely. They had it as a DM reward originally, so it was an exclusive module that you would get. But they just recently, as of I think it was this month or the last, it's actually part of the Dungeon Magazine. So, I mean, you need a subscription, but they've updated it to the current sort of 4th edition stats.
Okay, great. So, yeah, so you can go get the Village of Homelet if you like that as a start point. Make that a start point if you want to learn how to play D&D. Make it a start point. Go for some dungeon crawls. Learn the characters. Make yourselves at home. Learn to roleplay. It's great for everybody.
Yeah, actually, with Insider, you would get quite a number of modules, PDFs. Like, I mean, in Dungeon Magazine, so there's quite a number of starting spots you can pick from.
Anything else to add, Derek?
No, I think we're good. We've talked about everything we can talk about for this season, I think we're done. Yeah, I think it's time to take a breather and move on to, what's the new one called? Storm Over Neverwinter?
Mm-hmm. Storm Over Neverwinter. Yeah.
And this is a pseudo-sequel to Lost Crown of Neverwinter, written by Eric Scott DeBee, who not only wrote the Lost Crown of Neverwinter, but he also wrote the very first season of D&D Encounters, The Hellhaster's Lost Apprentice. And he's written a bunch of novels for Wizards of the Coast. So if you've read his stuff or played his previous adventures and enjoyed them, then I think you're going to enjoy what's coming up for next season.
And for those tech-savvy individuals, I'm sure this is going to tie in with the impending launch of the Neverwinter MMO that seems to be about to hit. They haven't actually officially released a release date for that, but I gather it's going to be within the next 8 weeks based on... Or I guess 9 weeks because they're session zero. But yeah, that's my thought anyway.
Yeah, yep. I agree. Well, this concludes D&D Encounters Season 12 Against the Cult of Chaos, Session 8, the finale. Join us, I don't know, join us when we play. Yeah, in 2 weeks from now. For Storm Over Neverwinter, D&D Encounters Season 13. Thanks a lot for being with me, gentlemen, for the past, 8 weeks now?
Indeed.
Yep. I want to, again, just say thanks to Craig, who, when we first invited him to come on the show, we said, why don't you come out the first week and we'll see how things go. And here we are 8 weeks later. We've had him come out every week. So, thanks again, Craig, for giving us your time and your thoughts. I think it certainly added something to this series of podcasts, especially given the non-linear nature of the adventure. Those first few weeks, I think we really got a lot of value seeing and hearing, well, not so much seeing, but at least hearing all about the perspectives of a third DM. So, thanks for that.
Well, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
And another shout out to Sean Merwin. Thank you very much for actually coming on and speaking with us about about the adventure that you co-wrote. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20Foot, and visit 20FootRadius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D Encounters. That's 20FootRadius, 20FT, radius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.